We all have our heroes. I have many. But two we celebrate today, March the 21st. For the, I don't know how long, last five, 6 years, we've celebrated March the 21st as Bach and St. Benedict Day. Two very different characters, two fundamentally essential European characters who in their own ways in completely different times have shaped our civilization and have shaped me personally. I sometimes think that the music of Bach is the only decent argument in favor of Protestantism that I've heard. The only one. But I'm not a Protestant, but I do love Bach. I do love Bach. And I if he's not a canonized saint, and if never he will be, I feel so strongly that he is in heaven. And so I do perhaps heretically venerate him. And I pray for his soul in case he's not. But Bach, we start with a little thought on Saint Benedict, though. Benedict dies in 543, a long time ago. But he was born in 480 in Umbria, in Norcia. And I'll just read here from a 1951 book, 1951, so 70-year-old book by Omer Engelbert, Lives of the Saints, a translation of Engelbert's Lives of the Saints. Born at Norcia in Umbria about 480, Benedict was pious and virtuous from childhood. He studied in Rome, and the sight of the disorderliness of his fellow students made him fear to fall in his turn into sin. Without taking leave of anyone, he fled to the mountains of Subiaco, bit of a rebel. But look, it's the sight of the disorderliness of his fellow students. He's the odd one out, that's what he feels. And he just has to act. He just has to act. Back to the book. There, in Subiaco, a monk named Romanus gave him the religious habit and showed him as a place of retreat a cave known to none. Benedict had lived there for 3 years when the fame of his virtues reached some monks whose abbot had just died. Virtues, 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 virtues. They insisted that Benedict become his successor, the abbot's successor, but certain of them, finding him too severe, put poison in his wine. Certain of them, finding him too severe, put poison in his wine. And here we have the famous miracle. The glass broke when Benedict, according to his custom, traced the sign of the cross over his drink. I have often warned you, Benedict said, getting up, that we would never suit each other. And he returned to his cave. However, more and more disciples placed themselves under his guidance. He built 12 monasteries for them, each of 12 monks, at the head of which was an abbot. About 529, Benedict left Subiaco with Maurus, Placidus, and some others, and turned towards Monte Cassino. There stood altars dedicated to Venus, Jupiter, and Apollo. The holy man broke the idols, upset the altars, set fire to the sacred grove, and in spite of all the persecutions of the demon, built an abbey, which has since been many times destroyed, but which has always risen from its ashes. The rule which was observed there, founded on silence, work, prayer, contrition of heart, and respect for the human person, is a monument of wisdom that has survived the centuries. There was a time when 40,000 monasteries followed his rule in the West. A few weeks after the death of his sister Scholastica, Benedict had her tomb opened as he wished to be laid to rest beside her. He was then, without warning, taken with a violent fever. The sixth day he was carried, at his wish, into the oratory of St. John the Baptist, and there received the viaticum. Then, standing with his hands lifted to heaven, he drew his last breath. So today we celebrate Benedict, our great spiritual father, for many, many, many in the world, monastic and lay people. And we jump now more than 1,000 years into the future to another great influence, a great man of faith, Bach. And I read here a little biography of Bach from a wonderful book called The Complete Book of Great Musicians, and this is a children's book. So take note of this. This is a children's book printed by Oxford University Press. It's by Percy Scholes, and it was published, I think, in the 1930s. I'm just trying to look for the published date in my edition. The copy I've got, it's a lovely old copy that I found in a secondhand bookshop in Wales. It's first published in 1920. This particular volume is printed in 47. But so this is the quality of education from 100 years ago. 100 years ago. This is a children's book. So you'll note the sort of childish language, but it's by no means dumbed down, if you see what I mean. This is chapter 5 of that great book. John Sebastian Bach, that's what they're calling him, 1685 to 1750, the Merry Miller and his descendants. There was once in Germany a Merry Miller whose name was Veit Bach. What a lovely opening to a story. There was once in Germany a Merry Miller whose name was Veit Bach. Besides being a miller, he was also a musician. And whilst his mill was grinding away, he would twang his zither and, we may imagine, troll out a jolly song. Now, Veit had a son named Hans, who was a carpet weaver by trade, but like his jovial old father, a musician as well. He played the violin. So, perhaps, the father and son played duets sometimes, for a zither and a violin would go pretty well together. Hans, too, had a son, and he was called Christopher. He became chief musician to a great nobleman and had two boys, twins. They looked just alike, and funnily enough, he called them both by the same first name, John. So they must have been very confusing when they were at school, especially if they were dressed alike. Their second names, however, were different. One was John Christopher and the other John Ambrose. They were both good performers on the fiddle and played other instruments as well. In his turn, John Ambrose had two sons, and they were both great organ players and composers, but the younger was the cleverer, and he was called John Sebastian Bach. All this is told here in order to show you what a musical family the Bachs were. The orphan. When John Sebastian was only 10 years old, his father and mother died, and he had to go to live with his elder brother. He could already play the violin, for his father had taught him to do that. The brother sent him to school to learn his ordinary lessons, and himself taught him to play the clavichord and harpsichord. But the boy could soon play all his music by heart, and then he wanted something more difficult. Now the brother had a book of music, of which he was very proud. It was all written by hand, and had in it beautiful pieces by all the great composers of those days. He never let little Sebastian play from this book. Perhaps he was jealous of him, and feared he would learn to play better than himself, or perhaps the little boy sometimes had dirty or sticky fingers, as boys in those days sometimes had. Ha! At any rate, John Christopher kept this wonderful book carefully locked up in a cupboard. But John Sebastian made up his mind to learn the pieces in the book, so he managed to roll it up and pull it through the latticed door of the cupboard. At night he would do this, and then, by moonlight, set to work to copy all the beautiful pieces into a book of his own. One night, however, his brother caught him, and then all his work was largely wasted, for his copy of the book was taken from him. It had taken 6 months to make. Still, the labour was not altogether thrown away, for we may be sure that the copying had taught him a good deal about music and how it is composed. Holiday Tramps. Soon after this, Bach went to school at a place called Lüneburg. There were good organists to be heard there, and he used to learn a good deal by listening to them. But at Hamburg, miles away, was a greater organist still, a famous old Dutchman called Reinken. When holidays came round, Bach used to put some food in his pocket and all the money he had been able to save and trudge off to hear the great organist. One day, he had been on one of these expeditions and was tramping back. His money was nearly spent, and when he came to an inn, he did not dare go inside, but sat outside smelling the delicious things that were being cooked and wishing he could buy some of them. Suddenly the window opened, and out at his feet fell two herring's heads. He picked them up, and inside each of them he found a silver coin. So he was able not only to satisfy his hunger, but actually to turn back again to Hamburg to hear some more of the wonderful music. Who was it who threw the money? He never found out, and now we shall never know. The young organist. When he was 18 years old, Bach became a violinist in the band of a prince. After a few months, however, he left this band to become organist of a church at Arnstadt. He soon got into trouble at the church where he played, because he went to Lübeck to hear the music there under the famous Danish organist Buxtehude, and became so wrapped up in it that he stayed 3 months. When he came back, they found fault with him not only for his absence, but also because when he accompanied the chorales, or hymn tunes, on the organ, he put such wonderful accompaniments to them that he disturbed the people in their singing. His fame as an organist was, however, very great, and during the next few years in his several organist's posts, he became recognized as the best organ player of the day. He wrote most of his famous organ pieces at this time of his life. The Prince's Chamber Music. When Bach was 32, he took service with a prince at Curtin as his Kapellmeister. Here, he did not have to play the organ, but to direct the chamber music for the court concerts. So, this was a time when he composed no church music, but instead of that, a great deal of beautiful music for other instruments than the organ. The prince loved music, and was so fond of Bach that he made him go with him on his long journeys. Bach at Leipzig. When Bach was 38, he made the last move of his life, to Leipzig. Here he was cantor at the Thomas School and director of the music in two churches. He had to teach singing and to give the younger boys in the school lessons in Latin. At the university, he conducted the Students' Musical Society. It was a very important position that he held. A house of music. Bach's house at Leipzig was overflowing with music. His wife sang and all his children were clever musicians. Then, too, he had a lot of pupils about the house. They came from far and near to learn from him. Whenever any musicians came to Leipzig, they always went to Bach's house to pay their respects to him. Just as he wrote organ music in his earlier life, when he was mainly an organist, and other instrumental music in his middle life, when he was chief chamber musician to the prince, so he now wrote beautiful church music such as motets and cantatas, and passion music for the two churches with which he was connected. A cantata is something like a short oratorio. Passion music is also like an oratorio and tells the story of the last days of Christ. The king sends for Bach. When Bach was 61 years old, he got an invitation from Frederick the Great to come to his court at Berlin. One of Bach's sons was a musician at this court, and Bach was no doubt glad to have a chance of seeing him, as well as honoured by the king's request. As soon as he got to the court, they told the king, who was playing the flute, but who put it down and announced to his courtiers, "Gentlemen, old Bach is come." He made him play, just as he was, and without giving him time to remove the dust of travel. Whilst Bach was at the court, the king made him improvise a great deal, and also try all his organs and pianos. The piano was still a new instrument, and Bach preferred the harpsichord, or still more, the clavichord. Keyboard instruments. Pianoforte, harpsichord, clavichord, and organ all have keyboards, but the pianoforte has hammers to strike the strings. The harpsichord has quills to pluck them. The clavichord was what are called tangents, has what are called tangents, which cut off, as it were, the right length of string to make the note and strike it at the same time. The organ has pipes, not strings. Bach goes blind. Like Handel, Bach went blind in old age. All his life he had been so busy copying and playing music that he had strained his eyes. Bach died at Leipzig in 1750, aged 65 years. He is often spoken of as the greatest musician who ever lived. A very short biography of a great man, and there's much more to be said. It doesn't mention there the tragedies that Bach faced or much of his faith. But a lovely little introduction for children. But notice the prior knowledge, the prior vocabulary that's assumed in writing for children for 100 years ago. It's very interesting. So we pray for the soul of Bach. We thank him for his music. And perhaps we ask especially for the intercession of Saint Benedict today.
Ah, oh, it's gorgeous. Barmadich.